Namaste. Too much of Ananda. Okay. So today, as part of Sanatana Dharma, we take up the story of creation. But we may ask, why should we bother about how creation has come into existence? We are interested in our little story. Very good. The problem is our story also begins with the story of creation. Normally when we say that, tell me about your life, so what do people write? I was born on such and such date, in such a place, to such and such parent. So what we have done? We have given us three coordinates. Place, that is space. Time, that is time. Third is parents, causality. These are the three main things in the play. Time, space, causality. But the Sanatana Dharma says something very interesting. See, in dualistic religions, and I don't want to name, our story has begun with the first birth and ends with the first birth. If we are not endowed with very good qualities, bad luck. If we are a non-believer in some particular religion, bad luck. Now, this is very childish. To tell you frankly, I find it very strange when even people compare the vastness of Sanatana Dharma to, you know, a typical Semitic religion. It's too childish, very frankly. It doesn't even deserve to be compared. But if we take the way Sanatana Dharma puts it, that we have taken many lives to reach where we are, and there are more lives to cross when we reach to a still greater state. Then the problem comes that this story of our life, when we are born on such and such parent, such and such date, in such and such a place, is only one chapter of a big book of life. Where did it all begin? Therefore, we must know what is the story of creation, because that's where our origin is. See, as is our parentage, it conditions us. This was one of the problems. That all his time, all his life, there are people who are looking for their parents. They want to define themselves by their parents. Oh, my parent is so and so. Very moneyed person. How does it matter? Oh, you know who my father is, dad is? Now imagine if somebody turns and says, okay, tell me about your dad and mom. Oh, my dad is a very big man, big businessman. My mom, she's also a, you know, hi-fi lady. You know who you are, and then he asks you who you are, and you say, I am the child of Divine Mother. You see, there, what a stunning silence there will be. Can we understand what it means? So, what is our parentage? It defines us. We want to have a limited definition, our choice. We want to have an infinite, limitless definition. If at all we can use the word definition, our choice. So we can define ourselves in a limited way. I am this religion, I am that religion, I am this caste, I am this creed, I am this parentage, this surname, God knows how many, this state, this language, custom, choice. Or I belong to the infinite. I am a child of the infinite. What religion? This is before religions were born. Which God do you owe allegiance to? Before even the gods were born. Is it? Okay, tell us your story. So that's how our story is, the story of creation. See, Savitri starts with the story of creation. So how did it all begin? How did people know that about the origin? So there were some people who were not satisfied with these temporary answers. I am so and so, I am so and so. This gotra, that, this thing. They wanted to know who they really are. Because they had a fire in the heart. Unfortunately, now we have too many books and the fire has sunk below, because we read a book and I know it. They didn't have the books. There was no Veda written nor spoken. They had heard, received from those who had gone beyond. Here and there, see, the Vedas speak about the forefathers. So they were seeking. Seeking with what? Fire in the heart. This was given to them. And a faith that if there is a seeking, there is a finding. When you have thirst, there is water somewhere. With these two torches, most important, the seeking, aspiration, the will to find, and the faith that we shall find, they went. Where did they go? Forest, mountains, ashramas. Thankfully, there were no ashramas. There were probably some mountains, rivers. They sat on the banks and they went within. Why did they go within? If there is a source of the universe, it must be within everything. And obviously there will be a source. Whether you take a material paradigm or spiritual, doesn't matter. There has to be a source. I'm not going into logically that there is indeed that all consciousness. That for some other time. But they went within that there must be a way to find the source. It must be in everything. In atom, it must be there. It must be in the tree, it must be in the river, because source is everywhere. Where can it vanish? It's logical, isn't it? Very logical. So they said, who is the closest to me? Me. People start finding God in somebody else. So outside me, my relative, my father, mother, my friend, he is God. Okay? You want, if you really do it with steadfastness and stick to it, you will end up discovering. You pick up a stone and say, this is God, you will end up discovering. Because God is in everyone. It's not about that person. That person may be a totally useless person. But because you are seeking God, you will end up finding. That is the whole story of Sankachud and Tulsi. But that's some other time. So you will find the divine if you are seeking in someone. But you will experience the same challenges. When you go inside, you will have the obstacles. You will have doubts, difficulties, challenges. When you seek outside, you will have the same problem. Doubts. Is he really God? Is she really God? You will have the same challenge. You seek in nature. You will see a material process. You will see, is God really there? So same challenges will be there. Only they will take a different form. So we turn within and start seeking. So they turned within and started seeking, and fortunately there were no books. Big help. Books can be a wonderful help. But books can also create a difficulty. It can create an illusion of knowledge. Whereas books are to lay a foundation for knowledge. It's to help us navigate through the journey. But it doesn't mean that by reading a book I have undertaken the journey. When you don't have a book, you are helplessly undertaking the journey. When you have a book, sometimes one may feel that now I have finished the journey. Whereas books are the starting point of the journey and the roadmap. So you have to carry it time to time. Brush up, keep abreast. It's to set the fire. Spiritual books can also ignite the fire. And whenever you are feeling low, receive the fire. So that purpose itself, also because we are mentalized beings. So they went in search. And what route did they take? There are three routes that human beings can take. Thought. We know thought exists. Thought and the senses, I'm including them. Then there is will, and the third is feelings. So we can take any of these three routes. But the early seers, they took the route of thought. It's more readily accessible. Feelings are, can be terrible nightmare, you know, if you don't. Feelings are like plunging into samudra with all the whirlpools. But it's also true that it's the shortcut. And if you dive deep enough, you'll find all the pearls there. Because the divine resides in the heart, but they went through a route of thought. As Shubhendu says, they swam through seas of thought. So they raised questions. I am getting this thought. What are the types of thought? What are the levels of thought? Where does thought come from? So when they started refining thought, they reached a point where thought started changing its character and became a luminous vibration, the mantra. So thoughts can be very crude. If you start refining, purifying, going layer, layer, you'll touch a point where the thought becomes a mantra. Mantra is not just a string of words. It's a string of words which is filled intuitively with the rhythmic vibrations of light. It is evocative. It is power. Look at Sri Aurobindo's synthesis of yoga. Life divine also. Human cycle. But synthesis of yoga is prosaic poetry. If you read through, you'll feel that every sentence is a mantra. Because it has that ring of truth. It vibrates with this. The spandan is there. It's written in English language. Doesn't matter. It is instinct with the vibrations of the light. So they found the mantra. So first thing was they found the mantra. They didn't have a book to tell them which mantra. They discovered that vibration of light. And they started embodying it. So how to embody that vibration? Through speech, through the word. So with the agency of the word, they found their first great clue. They ascended upward through currents of thought and reached a point where thought changes into mantra. But the mantra is still the key. And using the mantra, they turned it into the locks of the spirit. And they opened the door. And what did they find? They found tremendous light. Light, endless light. And the mantra itself merging into it, becoming the original rhythm of creation. The Nad Brahman, Jyotir Brahman. They found in that all limits are ceasing to exist. Anantam. And when they saw, they wanted to go still further. So at first they saw that light and vibration. It took the form of a being. And then they beheld the being. And they experienced that, oh, this is the true being. Sad Vastu, it doesn't perish, because every time they witnessed was ever the same. It's not subject to decay. So it's Sad Vastu, it's truth substance. It's pure existence. And then they started seeing all existence contains that. So it is the one true existence. This is the source. But they started seeing it everywhere. Then they discovered it is all awareness. A little contact of it awoke in them the intuitive ray with which they could know about things without going through the long, detailed, elaborate process of the analytical mind. So they discovered, oh, this is supreme consciousness. Even a little of it ray can give me the knowledge which otherwise with the laboring mind I could not know. They started understanding. Have you ever wondered how the rishis found that, you know, this jadi booty is helpful? They had no such, you know, statistical methods. Now we are thinking, yes, it may be helpful. How they found it? Purely by intuition. So they discovered in the rays itself was tremendous. They couldn't enter the light, but they saw the source. And when they bathed in the ray, it changed their mind into an intuitive mind. And they could see that this is supreme knowledge. But it was not just knowledge. It began to change their life and their relation with the world around. The tiger does not attack the yogi. So they said, it is also tremendous force, supreme force. And then they discovered that its contact gives rise to such an experience which can only be, the only word that can be used is ananda, anandam brahmeti. And then that Sad Vastu gave them tremendous peace. It's like we were always looking for that truth and we found it. So they experienced shanti, sat, ananda, chit tapas, shakti, madhurya, call it so many things, qualifications, above all the love that is oozing out. So all this they experience. But they were not happy with that. Imagine. Where did he come from? So they went beyond and discovered a state which was beyond the one Sachidananda. But of that they could not say anything. Because to speak about it would be to define it and limit it. So beyond Sat, they discovered non-being. Not the non-being which is an unformed state, but the non-being who is beyond the being. And the mother speaks of beyond being and non-being, but that's different. So they used a word, Parabrahman, ultimate, Tao, of the ancient thinkers. So they discovered it. Now they had a choice. They discovered that if we go into it, we cease from all existence, non-existence, everything. That much they could sense. Why? Because they were already living in the ray of intuition. So they sensed, if I take a plunge for one more step, gone. Some took that step and vanished. Others said, let me give the great news. So they became masters. For many who vanished, I mean, they were not too many, but whatever. Some said, we will hold on here. One day we will vanish into it. They became masters living in the ray of the sun. Some said, let me see how far these rays can nurture me, how much it can change me and my life. So they became the initial precursors of what today will be the yoga of transformation. They were still living in the rays. So they knew that there is that beyond power that can, but the rays cannot fully change us. The rays, that was what is Swar, and this is the Maharlok, which is beyond. But it was heavenly, such so blissful. This itself was a huge thing. So they came and declared to whom? To commoners. Now they knew that if we tell them, they will either think we are mad fellows. Kill them. That's how society even that day time treated. All the asuras and rakshasas, they attacked the ashramas. What are they speaking? They are misguiding people. Life is real. Wear a mask. Go. You know, God is all TK. But ultimately the virus is more omnipresent and real than God. This, what is life for? Desire. These people are saying that renounce desire, you will have a greater bliss. We don't believe. So the asuras will attack. Common humanity was still asuric, still rakshasic. It had not reached that level. The rishis were involutionary beings. They came from above and they could see. They came to plant the seed of aspiration so that some will pick the trail and arrive at it. So what they did, they played a very smart trick. First use of code words. Password. They gave their entire journey in a coded form. Coded images they took from every. We want cows. Oh, they want cows. Leave them. Gomati. Go. We want horses. Horses. Okay, theek hai. It's okay. They are wanting horses. But what is horse? The divine force. What is cow? Go. Light. So they put it like we are on a journey. We are engaging with the forest, jungle. So it was for the safety. And also because the adhikari had to enter into it, and there were many reasons, so they gave it code, which is the secret of the Vedas, which after long, you can't find it just by an analysis of words. Because words will ultimately say it could be this, it could be that. Of course, you will ultimately, if you use constantly, see which word, as Shurbindu has done, which word will consistently apply, then you can arrive at. But, you know, even the words have changed because the original Sanskrit is no more what was practiced. So Sri Aurobindo gives us the secret of the Vedas. But this is how they found. This was the process. So what did they find? The first state, nothing can be spoken. It is beyond existence and non-existence. It's darkness covered with darkness. Why it is darkness? There is nothing dark. There is no night. There is nothing like this. But there are limits. Whatever is beyond the limits of our sight is dark. So what is meant by that original darkness? There is no sight which can peer into it. Our sight is not developed enough to see what is inside it. So it's darkness wrapped within darkness. And out of that, one Sachidananda emerges. Now that's where they had seen the vision of Sachidananda. Okay? Understood now how Sachidananda came into existence yesterday. It's out of that state. So we have the Nasadiya Sukt, which describes about that state. And it says cryptically, even the gods don't know. Who can say what is there? And then very cryptically the Rishi says, he says that, well, existence came, but we don't know. He knows about it, why creation came. Maybe he also doesn't know. Because how do they know what is in the heart of the creator? But this much they know, that desire seized him and he experienced desire above and strength below. What is desire above? It's not desire as we understand. Obviously, he's not desiring, oh, let me buy this object. There's no object. The desire, eko ham bahushyami, eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. So this desire is the will seized upon him to become many. What is that will? We'll see that. That's an interesting story. So that will seized him. And all around he was surrounded by will from above and strength below. He was as if a tremendous power was developing inside, wanting to explode. And this power turned this whatever that beyond any description into a golden egg. Hiranyagarbha. The golden womb of all things. Now what is this golden womb? Sometime later Puranas you see Vishnu sleeping. And you know, he's also regarded as Prajapati. So golden womb is, they say, Kasme Devaye Havishavideham. Who is the greatest god? Because there are so many gods. Who is the greatest of them all? So Hiranyagarbha is the greatest god. Why? Because he is the origin of all gods. He is the Lord. He is the Prajapati. Lord of all creatures. So this golden egg, and he takes the form, limbs and everything, and he is floating on cosmic waters for an indefinite period of time. Meaning thereby time is yet to be born. Space and time are yet not there. So he is floating, and then, and what is it? It's the heat of tapas, intense concentration of whatever it is. He turns into a golden egg. And who is brooding over the golden egg? That will, that tremendous power, energy, conscious force. And who is that? The Divine Mother. And then one day, like from the womb, she breaks forth, and there emerge these four great gods, the first four gods. Who will they be? Aspects of Sachidanand. So infinite existence, Brahmaji. But not this Brahma. For every of these gods, you will see a Maha word associated. Have you ever seen Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Shiva, Mahavishiva? I don't know whether Brahmaji has a Mahabrahma or not. But it means that. Then Krishna, you will see that there is a, you know, ultimate Krishna who is described in the Bhagavat. Then, of course, you have for every god, Ganesh, you have Mahaganapati. Even there is a name like that, no? So what is it? That every god ultimately has the origin there. So there in its original splendor, where is the aspect of the one conscious, he becomes Maha. Maha means this is a manifestation, that is the ultimate origin. So we have out of the one, four emerge, the infinite existence who will later on in Puranas become a limited Brahma. Limit himself for a limited creation in the lower, we'll come to that. And then infinite consciousness, Vishnu. That's why he is also Narayana, all pervading in everybody. Because consciousness is everywhere. Existence is also there. And this is given to Vishnu to maintain the dharma, balance of dharma. Why? Because consciousness creates the order. It has ordered. Existence is there. But who will order? Fashion things. Their law of being. The law of truth. Consciousness. So he is the maintenance of whole dharma. That's why he sometimes also describes as Aditya, the giver of the law of truth, the highest of the Aditya. So you see all these names are so significant. And then that infinite force becomes Mahashiv. It can completely annihilate everything or completely create everything. It has that power. And because he can destroy everything, he becomes the ultimate, in a way, God. The moksha, he can liberate the soul from everything that is transient and perishable. And then we have the infinite Ananda, picturized very interestingly as a child, because he is ever newborn. See, Ananda, even in normal life, ordinary life, you know, when people start losing joy in life, it's because they are becoming fossilized, stuck to ideas, fixed ways of life. Life becomes miserable. The moment you feel there is limitless things to achieve and aspire for, then you experience Ananda. So Ananda is infinite, Ananda is child. Of course, there are different names in all these. Now the Divine Mother, these four have come into existence. Then she does something very interesting. Of course, the mother gives the story in a slightly different way, that these four gods bring out of themselves further emanations we will create. And as these go out, these further emanations, they become disconnected from the other four. Each thinks, I am the most powerful. And you see what happens when you think you are the best, then you have already dug a dip to become the worst. Because you have to learn the lesson of humility. So that's how these four turned into their opposite. What infinite existence became? Totally asad, falsehood. Truth became falsehood. Sad became falsehood. Ananda became suffering and pain. Consciousness became unconsciousness. Force became total weakness, helplessness, darkness. That luminous force becomes utter darkness. And then there is a call from there. Now, Divine Mother had brought out the four gods and it's all gone into chaos. So she says, okay, now I'll go. So she takes a leap. Now another story starts here. She takes a leap and plunges. So when she plunges, suddenly Now, this the Vedic story. So, the gods have different names. Okay, so in the Vedas, we have Varuna, the vastness. He notices, he tells Brahman, the Lord. He says, you know what? I see that your power is diminishing. He says, is it? Why? Because she has come out. So, Ishwara and Ishwari, you have the out of the one, there is the Purusha aspect who is pure existence. And the gods perform a sacrifice on the Purusha, and out of the Purusha, all the, the fourfold order, the herbs, the mountains, the galaxies, the sun, the moon, the Agni, all the gods emerge from the Purusha. Ultimately, he becomes the rishis, everybody, all existence emerges from him. And consciousness, force, knowledge and will, she becomes, for the sake of the play, Parameshwara and Parameshwari. And together, this is the infinite bliss of creation. Now, what is the difference between this bliss and that bliss? That is the bliss of oneness. This is the bliss of multiplicity. They don't separate in reality, but they assume two modes, masculine and feminine. Like, single parent has to play both roles. So, the one becomes masculine and feminine. Parameshwara and Parameshwari, Ishwara and Shakti. Now the creation is proceeding further, 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 and there are several micro steps. But as it goes further and further, how is time and space created? That one extends himself and becomes space. And as there is movement within the different elements in one's being, it becomes time. So that Purusha is described in the Purush Sukta as the cosmic being. And beyond him also there is the transcendent. So he is at once the transcendent, the cosmic, and also he enters into heart of all his creatures. But right now let us connect with the Divine Mother story. So they plunge and they enter into that utter inconscience. Why did she allow it? There was a wisdom. Let's leave it at that. Doesn't matter, we may call it an accident. It's our will, marji. But ultimately, the question is what to do from here. That's what the gods also wondered. So Varuna ji called Soma. What do we do? See, Brahman has become Sheen. What do we do? And he also called Mitra. And he called Agni. He said, let's go in search. But they don't know where to search. Where has she gone? And then they ask that give us that core of yours, that most beautiful part within you. Then we'll go with that light. So that part which is still there in the heart of Brahman is the Divine Mother, that love. So they carry it with them. Then they go to find whom? The bride of Brahman. So the story narrates that the bride of Brahman has gone to her wherever. And now they have to bring her back. And they are given instructions. See that you hold her by the hand. Don't bring her like that, Gently, step by step. She's a bride. You can't just forcibly bring her back. So now the marriage has to take place. This is there in Shiva Purana. So different Puranas will have the story. So the great goddess, Divine Mother herself becomes this lower nature, lower creation, lower Prakriti. Why? Because she is to redeem. So she enters into the darkness to redeem the darkness. The Mahagauri becomes Kali. The Tripur Sundari becomes Dumavati. Take it from any perspective. Slight variations here and there. So she enters into that. And then the gods come. First is Soma. Says, I'll go. Agni says, I'll also come. So Agni is what? He's the tremendous courage, force that always moves forward. And Soma gives the ananda of the journey. So they are going in good company. Otherwise, without Ananda, Agni, after some time will be, this is a very tedious task. Ananda without Agni will say, I am happy with wherever I am. Why should I go further? But Varuna has to cast his gaze, say where she is. He is the vast. Mitra has to keep on harmonizing all of them together. So all these four gods go. You see, Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. All of them. Each of the god has the feminine. All energy is from her. All the Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, Shri Krishna. So you have this, Brahmani or Saraswati and Lakshmi and Gauri or Parvati and Radha, they are all from the Divine Mother. She has accordingly given to each one the consort, which is a power which corresponds to each of the god for the work they have to do. So with Brahma there is Saraswati, because the Veena, she has to set the rhythms and the meters through which the world has to be born. With Vishnu consciousness there is Lakshmi, because she has to maintain the dharma. So power of harmony and love, through which she harmonizes all things. Ultimate dharma is what? Creating the balance. With Shiva, Parvati, destroyer, tremendous power of the mountains she embodies. Solid. And with Krishna, the ever playful Radha, Ananda. This is work to be happy and make everybody happy. Very difficult, most difficult work, by the way. Huh? Because it's not work, it is something beyond work. So Krishna is that Ananda. So they all enter and finally they find the Divine Mother and they say, please come. The Lord is waiting for you. Okay. I'll start the journey back. So we see the return journey step by step. This whole story is the redemption of matter. That love which they are carrying, she says, how will I come? Where will be the steps? So they build the steps. So Hiranyagarbha is sitting out there, no? He in his dream world has created the steps for the Divine Mother to return. So matter. So what is the first step? First step is when she knows, and you know it is a very deeply spiritual story, and now we have the Navdurga coming on. No? So the first step is that she becomes aware that I have to go back to Brahman. My Lord is waiting. So out of utter unconsciousness, there is that first step. And that step in spiritual language is called initiation. Initiation, not just sitting some people and giving a, of course, it's an imitation, but the real thing is, it is said that she received the mantra. She got the mantra that I have to return. This mantra will be the key to take her back to the Lord. So, when we are initiated back into this journey, we start the return journey. Before that, so the moment we receive the mantra, we are ready now for the return journey. But the moment we have the aspiration that we have to go there, we are now ready for the return journey. And that first step is called Brahmacharini. Is it not there? First is Shailaputri. Shailaputri is the tremendous power in matter. So out of that utter state of inconscience, matter is what? Obscurity. And in that, there is a fire which is born. Shailaputri. Daughter of the mountains. Divine energy hidden in matter. And then she becomes Brahmacharini. Brahmacharini is not about the way we understand no sex, I am a celibate. Yes, of course, because that is one aspect of it. But it's not about celibacy. It's not about, you know, I have never married. You one may be single, but Vibhicharini. So it has nothing to do with any of these things. Brahmacharini means now all my energies will start pointing towards the one Lord. Everything that I do, I'll bring him in. You will understand the yoga of transformation so much better this way. Sri Aurobindo says that there are two roads people have taken in their spiritual journey. One is where they created division between the lower and the higher. But the original journey is not that. Original journey is the journey of redemption of matter, of transformation. So in every activity, everything, now everything means everything, you have to focus back on the eternal. Look at the practical advice. You're going to work, okay? You can't say, I'm working for money, but I'll sit and meditate on divine. Work as service to the divine. You're in a relationship, married or unmarried, doesn't matter. Try to make this relationship not based on temporary satisfaction, but on something more lasting. Deeper love, a truer love. If you have this urge, you are actually a Brahmacharini, because you are focused on the one thing. You're eating food. Not that, oh, I'll quickly finish my food and then sit for meditation. No. Everything that we are doing should get connected to the eternal seeking. So this becomes Brahmacharini. Then next step is when she becomes Chandraghanta. Now because of this, focus, she begins to receive that reflected light towards which she is going. Something comes down that, okay, so there is a kind of feeling. It's not yet the warmth. The moonlight is a reflected light, it's cold. But some kind of light you feel, some glimmer, some glimpses, some little experience. So, you know, in dream, mother came to me. So beautiful, no? Chandraghanta. After that, you begin to receive also the energy of tapas, kushmanda. Now, the tapasya begins. More and more you are focused. More and more the energies. Then there's a result you have skandamata. Who is skand? Skand is the fire, the psychic in the world soul. At an individual level, it's the psychic being. Suddenly that fire is born now. You become conscious of the soul. So you see, becomes skandamata. But is it enough to be conscious of the soul? Now the real fight will begin. Achha, this fellow, he is trying to escape redemption of matter. Come, let us attack him. So Mahisasur, demons of greed and lust will start pouncing upon you. So what you have to do? You have to invoke Katyayani, Durga. She will come and battle. Long battle. How many days it lasted? We don't know. All kinds of rakt bij, endless desires. Slay one desire, another. Each drop you have, each time you slay a desire, 100 drops, 100 times it will come. Then ultimately Kali will come and drink all that poison. So you are freed. So Katyayani. Then when this is now battle, so lot of bloodshed, all this has happened. So someone has to come and clear the whole thing. So she comes as Maharatri, Kalaratri. Everything is gone. Now you are ready for the next step. Now she comes as the fair mother, Mahagauri. And then finally she becomes Siddhidatri. So these are the steps of the return and exactly correspond. So, you know, people have this Navratra and there is Garba runs. I don't know what all the people do, all kinds of things. They listen to Mahalyas. This is a religious city. It's okay, fine, nothing wrong with it. But the practice, it's a yoga. The entire Kundalini yoga is there. All the steps are there. Even if you don't, as I said initially, they used to give this code. Why? Because Puranas, if you see, they knew, some of the Puranas already know that there are Malechas who are going to come. And if you read the description of the Malecha, it is the Muslim invaders. So they gave all this language. Otherwise, they would have destroyed everything. So it was given in language which they also said. What did they end up saying? What is it? I don't know. These people imagine things. You know, Shiva, some god with moon. And, you know, they pray to snakes. They pray to rivers. They are not worth anything. They should just be converted. Otherwise, they are ignorant fellows. But behind this so-called veil of ignorance, there was the tremendous tapasya going on. Mystics came, reconfirmed the truth. And eventually the invaders have gone and once again the yoga given to India is rising again. So it was preserved. There was a whole time when it had to be preserved in secret language. Then you have all the images. When the Divine Mother starts shining in the Vedas, you have the image of dawn. She comes as the illumination. What does she give? Sunrati. She gives the luminous powers of truth. Go. Gomati. The right thinking which is filled with light, thought which is filled with light, luminous thought. So entire images, so the Divine Mother plunging into creation and the return journey is what we are witnessing. And we have reached a point where now we are seeing the dance of Katyayani phase is over. I believe first and second world war were battles enough. Now this Chinnavinna, all this China and all the missile, this is defeated Mahisasur trying to, you know, there is also a story like that. All the demons who are defeated, they come up again, but from their shadow. They are subconscious, so they will come up again, try to, but that part is over. What is the part going on? Maharatri. So all that we built, conceived, constructed, an entire world, old world, is being demolished. If you are frightened, then stay frightened. But if you are full of faith, then you say, if Kalaratri has come, it means the old world is being destroyed. What is going to come? Mahagauri, the fair mother, the divine mother. And they wait for her coming. When there is night, that is another meaning of, you know, Ya Nisha Sarva Bhuta Naam Tasya Jagrati Sayami. When there is night for everybody, people are in despair. Oh my God, what is happening? What is happening? What does the seeker of truth say? He waits for the dawn. We'll see in the Vedas, people waiting for the dawn, calling the dawn. They know it is going to come. They never despair. Sometimes the night stretches for 8 months, 9 months, like the Arctic. There's a whole theory based on that, Tilak's invasion, which is different from migration, but let not migration, which is different from invasion. So let not enter into that. But wait, doesn't matter. 9 months is a time for child to be conceived and delivered. So like that, one waits. Sometimes it's a post-term delivery, what to do? It's okay. Sometimes the divine has to do a cesarean section. All variations. But the new dawn of Mahagauri is going to come. Which means there will come a time after this when more and more men, a large section of humanity, would have turned inward seeking for the light. What about the others? Let's not start worrying about, you know, what will happen to the insect, to the monkey, to the ape. Links will remain. That's a different thing altogether. Leave it to the master plan. But there will be a section of humanity which, going through all this, will turn inward and start seeking the light with greater activity and with greater aspiration. I am seeing this in the lives of so many people, that in during this period, many of the old things demolished suddenly were broken. And it was a difficult phase people go through, still going through, but something greater awakened within them for the new, for the greater, and for the high, brighter. And then when she comes, a new journey will begin, at least for a section of humanity which is ready towards Siddhidhatri, the divine perfection that waits for us from on high, from time sempiternal. So this is the journey. This is our story. We are traveling. We have originated there as Jivatmas, because he wanted to become many. No, so he became all this. Many. We are, each of us is one of the many. Each of us is God in our essence. One of the many. And then, when the Divine Mother came, each of them said, I'll also come. Mama, with you. So God said, some of you stay with me also. So what happened is, there is a central being, the Jivatma, always staying with the Divine, above time and space. It didn't enter the play, but some part of it went with the Divine Mother. So that became the psychic being. So this is our journey. Our journey doesn't start with all this, I'm born to so and so in this place. It's all till we have these false identities. Mother says, when you have to search for the psychic being, you have to search for that element which is independent of time, place, and the circumstances of birth. That's the first step. So none of these identities, they are temporary identities. Okay, you know, if somebody asks me, what's your surname? I have to say, I am Pandey. It doesn't matter how you pronounce it and how you write it, it's irrelevant. What I have to say, it must match the Aadhaar card. But if I believe that I am, you know, great man by birth or great man by anything, because all greatness belongs to the divine, then I am digging a big well for me, limiting myself. So we start from that great truth of the Upanishad. He am I. Just that he remembers, I have forgotten. But because he remembers and we have forgotten, he comes again and again as avatar to remind us, you know what, you're basically my child. This whole story of Kartikeya, you will see it. Six kritikas. And when Shiva and Parvati say, now you have to, you are born for a great deed. Kartikeya doesn't want to come with them. He's enjoying with kritikas. Kritikas also don't want to give him away. And then finally, you know, they get convinced, and it's the same story. And then Kartikeya comes. He's trained. Initially, he gets very annoyed with his parents. Why did you discard me? But they have not discarded. It's a part of the journey process. Because had he been brought up by the Divine Mother and by Shiva and Parvati in the beginning, what would have happened? This Tarkasura knows. He will be after him. So he is hidden carefully in ignorance. So the Divine Mother becomes ignorance and hides the seed of the divine in it. It's a kind of safety. It doesn't attack. Till it has grown into a, you know, when king's children, prince, little prince, you have the story, you know, that people want to kill because they know he is the man who will become the king. So there is Adla Badli, Hera Feri, original. So they change and some Dhai brings the child. You know, those stories, no? But the original prince goes and grows up. Even Paris stories like that. It's told that he will be the cause of demolition of Paris. And Helen story is so symbolic of a Vedic legend. So, you know, they know that he is going to demolish Troy. They don't know. Along with Helen, Mahakali's incarnation. So he says, throw him away. So Paris goes away and they say ki we have finished him. But Paris grows up with cowherds, people and all. But he's destined. So he comes back and reclaims the kingdom. Same with Odysseus. So we are all that little prince and princess, children of the Divine Mother. We have forgotten. And so we think darkness is our home. This is our base. And when they call us to the light, we say, no, no, I am so comfortable. See, it's a prison, you say, but I am getting roti kapda makan. And then one day we wake up to this goal. We remember who we are. Kratosmar, Kratamsmar. We remember who we are. Soham asmi, I am that. Somebody whispers into the ear, Tattvamasi, thou art that. And that is enough for us to start on a new journey. And in that whole journey, the Divine Mother is with us, but in the ascending order. In the descending order also, Divine Mother is with us, but veiled in darkness. So we have Diti and Aditi, the mother of division, Daitya. So in the descending order, when we are going into the abyss, then we are handed over to Diti. She takes the journey. But when we are returning, it is Aditi. She is the one who is drawing us up. Undivided infinite consciousness is Aditi. Diti is divided limited consciousness. So our journey starts from Diti. We are handed over to Aditi. So the Asura which is there in all of us becomes Adeva by spiritual conversion. So this is the story, our story, the Divine Mother story, the story of creation. They are all different ways of looking at the same truth, but as long as we remember that our story is connected to the story of creation and our redemption is through the Divine Mother's grace and our true parentage. People say, mom and dad are gods, for God's sake, please. So many moms and dads we had. But there is one original mom and one original dad. They are the one who are going to carry us. So with this, we can stop today. Thank you so much. Namaste.